Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, March 16th, 2017. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Chateau Reopens After Fix in System, by Marie Nagel. Bloomington. The Chateau Hotel and Conference Center was reopened and welcoming guests Wednesday afternoon, 1 week after city officials ordered its closure because the fire alarm system was not working. The management of the Chateau Hotel is pleased to announce that the hotel has been reopened, said Jeremy Kruthis, the Chateau's general manager, in an email. The city of Bloomington forced the closure of the hotel and its conference center at 1601 Jumer Drive on March 8th, after conducting a test and discovering that the fire alarm system wasn't working properly. Kruthis said that during the test, a signal was sent to a third party who notified the fire department and senior management at the hotel, but did not automatically set off the internal warning systems at the hotel. The fire panel has been replaced, said Kruthis. The city on Wednesday conducted a full test of the system and has authorized the hotel to reopen. Kruthis added, the hotel management took every necessary step to provide for the safety of its guests, its employees, and its physical business. The hotel contracted a company to replace the fire alarm control panel and to work overtime to get it fixed as soon as possible, said Kruthis. The system, including smoke detectors and fire alarm pull boxes, was tested, and everything was working quite well, Bloomington Community Development Director Tom Dabereiner said Wednesday. The hotel worked very hard to get themselves back open, and they were very cooperative. City officials allowed the Chateau's conference center to reopen on Friday, but its 180 rooms remained shuttered while the new fire alarm control panel was installed for the four-story building. The adjoining Tony Roma's restaurant was also allowed to remain open because of evacuation circumstances similar to the conference center, which included locations on the first floor and multiple doors patrons could use to exit the building. The next story is headlined, Art, Science, Meet in Professor's Sculptures. Heartland Series, I, Robot, Take Influence from Literary Classics. By Lenore Sabota. Normal. Ask Michael McAvoy where he got his inspiration for a series of sculptures based on literary classics, and he will say, they all started with dumb ideas. But those dumb ideas have taken shape in several smart ways, providing new twists on Frankenstein, The Time Machine, and I, Robot, among others. It all started with Frankenstein and the Inhuman Genome. I was sitting at home reading Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, and because I'm kind of a geek, I had PBS on, said the Associate Professor of Art at Heartland Community College. The program was about the human genome, and McAvoy began thinking, if Dr. Frankenstein were alive today, he would be working with DNA. That molecule of an idea gave birth to a mixed-media sculpture with an artist-bound book on a wooden pedestal of walnut and poplar with a representation of the DNA spiral, including. Like Dr. Frankenstein in the novel, McAvoy cobbles together different items to make his creations, such as an old upright clock he found at Monster Pawn that became the base for his Time Machine sculpture. His most recent piece in the series, I, Robot, was the center of attention during a recent Heartland Board of Trustees meeting. Board members and others at the meeting took a field trip, walking to the Instructional Commons North building to see the sculpture, a clear torso of cast resin with a spine made of cell phones and a Nook tablet for a face. Programmed using an Easy Robot microcontroller and software, the head of the sculpture follows people around the room, and the face changes expressions. Those actions caused mixed reactions, from smiles to fascination to a little discomfort. I was totally taken aback, said board member Don Gibb. As a former science teacher, Gibb liked the mixture of science and art in iRobot and the other pieces. "Anytime you can take two different fields and put them together makes it more interesting," said Gibb. "I was very impressed with that and very impressed with him." But iRobot nearly didn't make it to completion. "When I realized this was going to be robotic, I kind of dumped it," said McAvoy. But a sabbatical from the college gave him the time he needed to fully immerse himself in the project without interruption or distraction. Sometimes he would awaken at 4 a.m. and work until midnight, he recalled. "You can devote all your mental and physical energy," he said. He takes many of the techniques he uses in his sculptures and teaches them to his students. "Something I try to instill in my students is that with multimedia art, I'm not limited by my medium," McAvoy told board members. McAvoy describes his works as making art about my romance with science. The idea for The Invisible Man came to him while he was seeing a new doctor. "The doctor never made eye contact with him," McAvoy recalled, "and I wondered, was I invisible?" The Invisible Man mixed-media sculpture, which includes McAvoy's own MRI and X-rays, speaks to those who feel invisible to doctors and insurance companies, he explained. The purpose of these pieces go beyond the melding of science and art. "Because I was dyslexic and had a hard time learning to read, I want to inspire others to read," McAvoy said. A young boy at an exhibit of McAvoy's work peppered him with lots of questions about the sculptures and the books that inspired them, he recalled. As the boy left, McAvoy heard him tell his mother, "We have to go to a bookstore." "To me, that's what it's all about," said McAvoy. The next article is entitled, "Guards Voice Assault Concerns. Reduced segregation time may be linked to rise in inmate attacks," by Edith Brady Lunny. Pontiac. Inmates who assault staff at Pontiac Correction Center will face legal consequences, Livingston County State's Attorney Randy Yedinak said Wednesday, starting with felony charges filed against four inmates involved in an August incident that injured six officers. The union representing correctional officers applauded the charges in the August incident and pledged support for possible charges against an inmate involved in a February incident where an officer was struck with a crudely made shank. Speaking ahead of a rally Wednesday outside the prison to raise awareness of prison assaults, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Council 31 President William Lee attributed an increase in assaults to the reduction of segregation time for Pontiac prisoners. "We want people to know that the state is cutting segregation time and sending guys back into general population who should not be there," said Lee. The Illinois Department of Corrections is obligated under a settlement agreement reached in a federal lawsuit in 2016 to review the segregation terms of all mentally ill inmates to determine if reductions may be made. IDOC spokeswoman Nicole Wilson said Wednesday that 68 Pontiac offenders had segregation time reductions in January, but 45 of those remain in solitary confinement. Of the 23 who were released to general population at other prisons, only two have committed new offenses, including the prisoners who assaulted the officer in January, according to the IDOC. Some of the 68 offenders who saw cuts in their segregation were seriously mentally ill, said Wilson. In addition to the requirement to comply with the federal mandate, IDOC also considers the segregation cuts to be an incentive to change inmates' behavior, said Wilson. "The culture of corrections is absolutely changing. 96% of the people in our custody will go home. If we don't modify their behavior before they are released, we increase their chances of coming back," said Wilson. The union representative said the Pontiac prison leads all other state facilities in inmate assaults on correctional officers. The facility, which houses the state's most violent prisoners and holds the majority of its inmates in segregation, saw a 50% increase in assaults last year, according to the union. The IDOC will refer the January assault to Yednak for consideration of charges, according to Wilson, who added, "No staff assault is acceptable." Yednak said he has filed a total of 14 criminal cases against inmates and will consider charges that involve non-physical but equally unacceptable conduct, such as inmates tossing urine on officers, a common occurrence in prisons. Yednak said some inmates may be acting under the assumption that they get a free shot at correctional officers, and that can't be. Here's a story entitled, "Saybrook Memorial to Honor Veterans," by Kevin Barlow. Saybrook. Saybrook American Legion member Joe Hale is glad the McLean County town of about 700 people is doing what other towns have done to honor their veterans. When you drive through southern Illinois, you will see that almost every town, no matter how big or how small, has a nice memorial to honor the veterans, said the post adjutant for American Legion Post 427. Saybrook needs the same thing. The Legion is developing the monument in partnership with the Saybrook Sons of the American Legion on an empty lot the Legion owns in downtown Saybrook. It features a concrete square with a center field to be filled with engraved bricks and three flagpoles, but more work is planned. "We dedicated it last year during our 4th of July celebration," he said. "It's an ongoing project, and we are doing it in phases." The concrete work was donated by Butler Construction of Saybrook. Donors can pay for the bricks, which will be engraved with the names of veterans. The bricks are available in four sizes, in prices ranging from $100 to $2,000, Hale said, depending on how much text the buyer wants engraved on it. Hale, a Vietnam veteran, is purchasing one that will have names from four generations of his family on it: his grandfather, who was in World War I, his father, who was in World War II, his own, and his son, who was in the Persian Gulf War. "We have room for about 700 bricks, and we are trying to get the word out," Hale said, noting the difficulty is finding ways to reach out beyond the core group of community residents. "It's chicken fry season, and our problem is that once you get the word out to that crowd, you don't have a lot of new people beyond that crowd to touch base with." Hale said the group hopes to raise about $50,000 for the project. "We would really like to make this nice and have something that Saybrook and our veterans can be proud of." In Leroy, volunteers are building a wall displaying the names of local veterans dating back to World War I. Anyone wishing to donate or wanting more information on the Saybrook project can call Hale at 309-475-8150 or Jim Quinn, Legion Treasurer, at 309-475-2601. The next story is entitled, "Community House, a Work in Progress. Local Agency to Solicit Feedback from Nearby Bloomington Residents," by Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. Talks are continuing between Westside Bloomington residents and Mid-Central Community Action on how the Jefferson Street Community House can best serve neighborhood residents. "We are still in the process of setting up an advisory group so we can get feedback on how the residents in the immediate area want the community house to work," said Matthew Dratt, the Director of Resource Development and Community Engagement for Community Action. "We have met once since the City Council approved the project and received some great feedback, but we want to have more." Several neighbors of the house at 828 West Jefferson Street have been invited to participate, he said. "They have been working very hard to try and get the neighborhood involved with this," said Melissa Fogler, who lives about two blocks from the house. "We want the immediate neighbors first, and then expand to the wider section of West Bloomington as the primary members of this group, Dratt said. Also, we want community stakeholders and people involved with youth as members, too. Community Action bought and rehabbed the home with grant money from the State Attorney General's office and offered to let a police officer live there. While that plan didn't progress, officials announced in December the city was considering leasing the property as a place for police officers to visit with residents, do paperwork, take breaks, and otherwise develop ties to the neighborhood. When several neighborhood residents opposed what was then being called a police substation, officials decided to put a larger emphasis on making it more of a community site. An opening date for the community house has not yet been set, Dratt said. One of the issues that came up was the need for the house to meet the standards for the Americans with Disabilities Act, he said. We are working with the city to get those projects done. We definitely want the house to be accessible to everyone. The city is leasing the property from MCCA for $1 per month and promised to spend $5,000 to $10,000 to make the house ADA compatible. Because we are still in that process, we don't have any idea when we might be open, Dratt said. Obviously, we would like it to be sooner rather than later. The next story is headlined, Bush Withdraws Name from Unit 5 Board Race, by Julia Evelsizer. Normal. Eric Bush has withdrawn his name from the ballot for a seat on the McLean County Unit 5 Board of Education. Bush, 48, of Normal, said Wednesday he is ending his campaign due to a state law setting geographic restrictions on candidates in the race and for personal reasons. Bush was among five candidates vying for 3 4-year seats in the April 4th election, but a state law designed to ensure geographical balance on school boards meant he was in a head-to-head race with incumbent Joseph Cleary. The board may have no more than 3 members from 1 congressional township. Bush and Cleary both live in congressional township 24N, range 2E, in Normal Township, which already has 2 members on the board. When I found out a state law effectively pitted me directly against board member Joe Cleary for 1 seat, I wanted to withdraw, said Bush. I believe Mr. Cleary is an excellent candidate and see no reason to directly oppose him. I didn't want him to get the idea that I was running because I was unsatisfied with what he's doing. Cleary, who was appointed to the board last year, thanked Bush for his support. I respect Eric's willingness to step up and serve his community and Unit 5 and appreciate his support for the upcoming school board term, he said. I wish nothing but the best for Eric and his family in the future. Bush also cited time demands as a component of his withdrawal. I simply wish to spend more effort pouring time into my family, said Bush. Unfortunately, I also have health issues that require intentional care and treatment, and I do not see how I will be able to take care of myself and my family, as well as properly serve on the Unit 5 school board. The remaining candidates running for the 3 4-year terms are Cleary, Solomon Sol Roberts Lieb of Bloomington, David Fortner of rural Carlock, and Tanya Leffler of rural Bloomington. Here's a story entitled WBRP Moving into Former Jesus House, by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. The West Bloomington Revitalization Project has purchased the former Jesus House at 724 West Washington Street to consolidate all its programs, including a new bike co-op, at one site. This is a proud milestone in our 10-year history, said Deborah Halperin, a WBRP volunteer and former board member. It's really been a remarkable journey for this grassroots organization. The WBRP, however, won't have to move too far. In fact, this will be the third building the group has occupied at the intersection of Allen and Washington Streets. The group initially rented a building at 800 West Washington Street, but quickly grew out of that space. Since 2014, WBRP has rented the larger building across the street at 801 West Washington, after trading spaces with United Barbers Stylists. We are up to our eyebrows in tools and activity and trying to do more, but running out of space, said Halperin. Then Jesus House was up for sale. We went across the street and saw all of this space that would be really wonderful for all of the things that we're doing. After deciding to take the Jesus House ministry on the road, owners Bonnie and Thomas Lentz sold the Jesus House building for an undisclosed price to WBRP, whose goal is to connect residents and enhance neighborhoods on the city's west side through educational and charitable programs. WBRP is raising $100,000 in donations for repairs at its new location, including a new roof, tuck pointing, and electrical work. We've raised $48,000 so far, said Halperin. With more than 3,000 square feet of first floor space, the new location will be able to accommodate all of WBRP's programs, which include bike repair work, the tool library, a free tool lending service, a community computer lab, a bicycle-based free mobile library, community gardens, and Veggio Oasis, which provides fresh produce for free. It's really exciting to see the potential that the space has so that we can grow, said Halperin. We can accommodate lots of volunteers and programming all happening at one time. If it can move into the renovated space by May, the group plans to start the WBRP Bike Co-op and Earn a Bike program in June. The new program will replace the group's annual Walk In, Bike Out, which has given away for free more than 1,000 donated and rebuilt bicycles to children or adults in need of reliable and affordable transportation. So the bike giveaway event on April 22nd at the Creativity Center, 107 East Chestnut Street, likely will be the last. People can ask questions about WBRP's expansion at the group's annual meeting from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Wednesday at First Christian Church, 401 West Jefferson Street. And here is some state news entitled, Illinois Revives Auto Voter Sign-Up. Updated proposal links registration to state agency visits. By Kiana Sapita Miller. Springfield. A Senate committee approved a new automatic voter registration plan Wednesday, sending to the floor a proposal that advocates say is tighter than one Republican Governor Bruce Rauner rejected last year. Democratic Senator Andy Mayner's plan would allow residents to automatically register to vote when they visit certain state agencies. The Senate committee endorsed Mayner's measure Wednesday with a 10-3 vote. Rauner vetoed similar legislation last year, fearing it did not contain enough safeguards to prevent voter fraud. Rauner's spokeswoman, Eleni Demirtzis, wouldn't say whether he supports the new plan. The updated version requires residents to confirm their eligibility before information is passed along to election officials or confidentially opt out instead. Its predecessor would have filed applications regardless, leaving election officials to follow up. Supporters said the proposal would cut costs and bolster turnout by modernizing the registration process. U.S. citizens already have the option to register to vote when they apply for a driver's license or state ID at Secretary of State's offices. Mayner's plan would allow residents to fill out dual applications when they visit the DMV, along with four other state agencies, including the Department of Human and Family Services and the Department of Public Health. The goal here is to make it easier for taxpaying citizens to interact with their government, Mayner said. He added that eliminating redundant government applications by implementing automatic registration has resulted in sizable savings for election authorities in other states. Seven states, plus Washington, D.C., have already made the switch, according to Democratic Representative Robin Gable of Evanston. Camille Williams, an organizer for Chicago Votes from Englewood, said the plan would help ensure young people get involved and cut down on confusion caused by people scrambling to register at the polls. Automatic voter registration will extend democracy to the communities that need it most, Williams said. Republican Representative Mike Fortner of West Chicago contends voters can rest easy knowing the new system, set to take effect next July, would not hazard an influx of ineligible voters. Participating agencies would use personal information filed in their system to verify whether a visitor qualifies to vote. This is a data set that is going to allow us to make a more secure check that people are qualified, Fortner said. He is sponsoring similar legislation in the House. The state's leading election authority expressed doubts last session over whether they had the time and resources necessary to roll out the original plan. But Illinois State Board of Elections attorney Ken Menzel told the Associated Press the latest version reduces that burden by having potential applicants opt out up front. Automatic registration, he said, could help smooth out the spike in applications election authorities face ahead of major elections. Here's another state item headlined, Durbin calls for railcar security. Chicago. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin told Norfolk Southern this week that it must do more to secure a major rail yard on Chicago's south side after three major gun thefts led to many of the weapons circulating in nearby violence-plagued neighborhoods, according to a letter the Illinois Democrat sent this week to the company's CEO. The letter, provided to the Associated Press by Durbin's office Wednesday, cites the theft of some 150 guns between 2014 and 2016. Officials say most of the guns, including semi-automatic rifles, spread into nearby communities, helping to fuel the kind of violence that last year led to 762 homicides in Chicago, more than in New York City and Los Angeles combined. These repeated incidents of gun theft jeopardize the safety and well-being of Chicago residents, Durbin wrote in the March 14th letter to CEO James A. Squires. The thefts haven't, until now, drawn much scrutiny from elected officials. There have been neither federal nor local hearings devoted to the rail yard gun thefts, contributing to a perception in communities hugging the yard that no one is taking responsibility. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for March 16th. Please stay tuned.